This is Let's Go Michigan with Jeff Sloan on 760 WJR. Your bird's eye view on Michigan's business and entertainment scene. Here's Jeff.
All right, welcome to Let's Go Michigan on this Saturday right before St. Patrick's Day. And that's always a fun holiday. Kristen, do you have any Irish in you by chance?
I'm sure. Isn't everybody Irish on St. Patty's Day?
That is true.
Right?
Now, I'm talking about the other 364 days of the year. We're all Irish on St. Patty's Day,
yes,
of course.
I believe there's a little part of me that is.
Traces back.
Yes, I think so.
Heritage tracing back
I'm
to
sure.
Ireland.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, who doesn't deep in their heart all kind of wish that you were a little bit Irish?
Of course.
Right?
Right.
Right.
No.
Mark,
wait,
Mark,
except Mark, for the Italian here.
Yes, yeah. Mark's purebred.
Yeah.
Pure all the way.
I'm kidding.
Italian, right?
Except for on Sunday, St. Patty's Day.
Right. Then I'll be Irish.
Okay. Well, tomorrow's the day, St. Patty's Day. And I'm curious, Kristen, you were asking me right before the show started, do you know what the origin story is of the St. Patty's Day holiday? And I have to confess, I don't, but I know you do or you wouldn't have asked.
Why the 17th?
Why the 17th, Mark?
Tell us.
It's the day he died.
The day St. Patrick died.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How you like that? 461 CE.
Look, Mark.
You know, that's kind of showing off a little, actually.
Right. Mark did homework before the show, which is great. So tell us, Kristen, I know you did some homework on this as well.
It is. So St. Patty's Day is a religious holiday. You're right, Mark. It is a holiday that's been celebrated for over 1,000 years, and it typically falls within the Christian season of Lent. And Irish families would traditionally, they'd go to church in the morning, and then they'd celebrate in the afternoon, dancing and drinking and feasting, specifically on Irish bacon and cabbage.
Ooh.
So that part of it, I'm all in on.
Yeah.
You got my attention there.
And this is kind of a fun fact. So here in the United States and many other places, we participate in or at least attend a St. Patrick's Day parade. However, the first St. Patrick's Day parade did not happen in Ireland. It happened in Florida.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why.
So rumor has it that it was held on March 17th in 1601 in a Spanish colony in which is now known as St. Augustine, Florida.
Ah.
How about that?
That's a great town, by the way. St. Augustine is a great town.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes,
right.
It is.
And that's a good fun fact. You can pull that out at the bar tomorrow.
Okay. While you're having your green beer, you can impress your friends.
Mm-hmm.
St. Patrick, who you mentioned, of course, is who the holiday is named after. He lived during the 5th century, patron saint of Ireland and its national apostle. Born in Roman Britain, he was kidnapped and brought to Ireland as a slave at age 16, later escaped, but returned to Ireland and was credited with bringing Christianity to its people.
How about that?
There you go. All right, great holiday. I mean, most of us just know it by the green beer. But there you go. For those who are a little more intellectual about the whole thing, there you go. Some information to impress your friends with. All right. Well, for those of us who just can't get entrepreneurship out of their brains, out of their minds, out of their hearts and souls, out of their spirit, for those of us who just can't, we want to know about St. Patty's Day from a business perspective, of course. Here's the National Retail Federation report on what St. Patty's Day is going to mean from a business standpoint. And it means this, 62% of Americans planning to celebrate, and it's expected to be a record spending year this year. Consumers are going to spend a record $7.2 billion, at least that's the projection for this year. That's an average of $44.40 a person on the holiday this year. $40 of it will be spent on beer, $4 will be spent on the Uber to get home.
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay. Anyway, big business on this day as well for those of us serving the community, whether you're a restaurant, a bar. Those are probably going to be making up the preponderance of people spending money on this holiday, that $44.40 per person on average.
Have you guys been to Chicago for St. Patrick's Day?
Yes.
I haven't, Mark.
It is cool.
It's cool.
They dye the river green.
Right. I know about that. I've seen pictures, of course. You guys have been there and have actually seen it.
Well, I live there, so yes.
Oh, you did live there. That's right.
Yes, I have been there. And it is a scene. It's something.
Wow.
It's cool. It's definitely cool to experience. But when I was living there and working there, both of my bosses happened to be Irish. and the office was basically shut down for the day. But because you couldn't get in anywhere to any of the Irish bars unless you were there at the very, very crack of dawn. So as a company, we would always go find a Mexican restaurant and drink margaritas.
How fun.
During St. Patty's Day. Because
margaritas on St. Patty's Day?
It worked. Yeah. You could order a green one, I suppose. Yeah, you couldn't ever get into an Irish bar. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. We hope that they're all full and everyone's having the time of their lives this year on St. Patty's Day, wherever they may go to celebrate it. Now, look, guys, just changing up the news a bit here. You know, we're all really inspired by, or most of us anyway, the warmer weather that's come along. We're kind of thinking spring might be here. Of course, it's a little up and down, still some chilly days here and there. We're not out of the woods yet. And the Weather Service has reported just a note of caution, as excited as we may be about spring being perhaps upon us, don't plant your flowers and your seeds yet.
Really?
No, not yet. They're saying there could be a frost still at least a month away, so not yet. Okay. Not yet. Kristen, you're a big gardener.
Well, I like gardening. I do my best.
Well, speaking of St. Patty's Day, you've got a green thumb, right? I'm keeping it on theme. Keeping it on theme. You know, we did talk about on the show, not only just the planting of seeds and gardening and all the rest, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the fruit-bearing trees.
Absolutely.
Here in the state, and fruit-bearing plants. Boy, that's a real issue. You do not want the buds early and then
it's
have
still
a frost
touchy.
Hit them. Yeah, and it is still touchy. That's right. So no singing to the plants yet.
No.
We just want them to sleep.
Stay
asleep for another month and a half, and then we'll wake them up and get them going.
Great.
Get those cherries and apples heading our way. Peaches. We're ready for all of it. Okay. And then I got to ask you, how'd you guys do with daylight savings time this week? We've completed our first week, actually not technically our first full week, but 6 days or so into daylight savings time. How you feeling?
I kind of struggled. I did. How about you? How about the kids?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we did okay. I've been following in the news that, you know, there's real push now to eliminate daylight savings time here in the city of Michigan, at least the change in times. There's now a new bill introduced, of course, Bill 770, to be technically correct. It was introduced this past Thursday by State Senator Thomas Albert, Republican from Lowell, and it's been referred to the Senate Committee on Government Operations. If it's approved, voters will then get the chance to decide if we want to continue moving the clocks back and forth or if we want it to remain on one standard time all year long. So how would you come down on that? I'm curious, each of you. Do you like the change? I mean, I know there's some pain this week. There's some getting used to the time change. But all in all, do you like it or you want it gone?
Gone.
Really?
Yes. Mark? Do you
hold it. I'm not done, Kristen.
What?
Would you want it to stay on the standard time or on the daylight savings time?
The time that it is right now.
That's the daylight savings time.
Yeah.
So you want to stay on the time where we get more light in the evening, even though you sacrifice a little in the morning.
Yes.
Okay. That's okay. Mark, what do you think?
I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
I'll go with that.
Okay. Well, that's where I am.
A bunch of copycatters. Just whatever I say.
Yeah, I'll follow Kristen's lead.
Yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, there's a little bit of a price to pay for keeping it on daylight savings time and consistent all the time. And that price really is the toughest to pay in winter when it's not going to get light until 9 a.m.
Yeah, that's why I hesitated because the winter, that's tough.
That's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. Mark, we're going to have
our hands
full.
You want to change
your mind? All right. And maybe the most interesting news of this past week, have you guys heard about what's going on in rural Washtenaw County? That area has now mandated that you can't have chickens, cows, and other livestock on your property there, even though it's considered a rural area. There was a town hall meeting of citizens on March 5th, and they got the chance to get out in front of their elected leaders there in a special session, no less, that was called for the very purpose of discussing this issue about whether or not citizens, landowners, property owners, those living there, should have the right to have livestock on their property. As Bill Sullivan said at the gathering, he's a resident there, it seems a little strange that out here in rural Washtenaw County, we're being told that even though we've got 3 or 4 acres of land, we can't have chickens, really. There's chickens in suburbs.
Oh, my gosh. There's chickens in Royal Oak down the street.
Right. There you go.
And he said 3 or 4 acres
of
land?
Yeah, 3 or 4 acres.
That seems substantial enough to
really
have
does.
Chickens. How about...
Mark? You're
goats?
You're violating the
yeah, we're going to report you.
Yes, we're going to get reported, Mark. Yeah, so it actually has to do with anyone under 5 acres of land can no longer have animals like chickens and cows and so on the property. Webster officials have initiated legal proceedings against owners who aren't abiding by the law. That's their interpretation. And under a given ruling where the township did take a particular family to court over this, the judge sided with the township, saying that that's right. The interpretation is that if you got less than 5 acres of land out there, rural area or not, no chickens, no cows allowed on your property.
Is it chickens and cows specifically?
It's livestock.
So goats.
Right. I would say probably right. Exactly.
Right.
Farm animals, goats, horses, et cetera.
Right.
You got to have 5+ acres
right.
in order to be okay with this.
And if you have these animals on your property and you've been taken to court and now they say you have to remove the animals, where are the animals going?
Well, that's a good question.
Running loose?
Well, I don't know. But, you know, here's the thing. And we talked about the fact that even suburban areas have chickens now allowed,
right.
or they're overlooking it, let's
yeah.
say, despite what the old laws might indicate and restrict. Here, how about this? At the town hall meeting, Stephanie Van Steenis, another resident in that community, said she recently had to rid her property of her beloved chickens after keeping the birds for more than 8 years. She got a township violation notice, and the Humane Society came to get those chickens. Yes, it did. And she said, and rightfully so, I can't believe it. In Ann Arbor, residents can keep chickens in areas the size of dog kennels, but we can't keep them on less than 5 acres. If I got 4 acres of land, I'm in trouble and can't keep chickens in my backyard. Boy, what is this world coming to?
Honestly.
What is this world coming to?
They can send them all to a nice little farm in Oxford, Michigan.
Oh, don't, no, don't even start. Although we do have our fair of chickens out at our lovely little farm. But I will tell you guys this. So we do have a rural property out in the country, and there is a property, I'm going to guess at least a quarter mile away, if not a half mile away, who had a rooster. And I will tell you, we heard that thing clear as day every morning at 6 a.m. when the sun came up, 5 a.m., whatever it was. There is a real thing to a rooster. Now, chickens don't bother you that way, but having a rooster, they make their presence known. You hear them. I happen to like it when I'm in the country. I love hearing that. But if I had to hear it every day, and if my neighbor were next door as opposed to half mile down the road, I might be having chicken sandwiches for dinner. But all right, so there you have it. News you can use. News you need to know if you're here in the Great Lakes State. Before we run to a break, just a couple of highlights coming up later in the show. We've got a really interesting story on something that was really a big part of Detroit culture for a long time when the auto factories and other shifts going on late at night for production purposes or service purposes were running late. You had people getting out of work early in the morning. Where'd they go? Not home. They headed to a local pub. And that culture still exists here in and around Detroit. We're going to highlight a story on that. And then we've got a story we all want to hear. The rise of the do-nothing vacation. How does that sound? I'm ready. I am so ready. If you are too, make sure you stick with us here. We're going to cover how that's back in vogue as opposed to the all planned out, all scheduled out, go fast, go, go, go kind of vacation. This is again about the rise of the do-nothing vacation we're in. You know, it's a time of year in the spring when you look toward the summer, you think about what are we going to be doing this summer? And there's something about the summer that it just feels good even thinking about, let alone doing that, just to let down, mm-hmm. just kick back. Now, over the last few years, and certainly with us, with young kids, I can tell you that it's healthy. The family kind of comes together when you're not rushing and dragging the kids here and there, and you're having the type of vacation, or you're planning the type of vacation, that's really just about relaxation, letting down, catching your breath, recharging the batteries, as it may be. And now, there's an article published in the Wall Street Journal, The Rise of the Do-Nothing Vacation. How about that? We're about to find out that it's okay, if not highly desirable, to take a vacation that is not one heavily scheduled out. Of course, you want to mix in educational vacations, making sure the
right.
kids see the sites they need to see and learn the things they need to see and be exposed to culture. Those things are all important. But mixing in, as Allison Poley, travel writer at the Wall Street Journal, points out, a do-nothing vacation is okay too. And we're about to hear all about it. Allison, you've just published this article. We're so glad you did. Kristen and I and other parents of kids have permission now to plan a do-nothing vacation and not have to say when the other parents ask, hey, what are you doing this summer vacation? Oh, we're going to hit Washington, D.C. We're going to fly here, fly there, see the sights and all that. Of course, it's all good to do that as well. But you can admit now that, you know what? We're going to go on a vacation and
do nothing.
How about that? That sounds amazing. I'm in. Allison Poley, tell us about this new trend of the do-nothing vacation.
So people are just feeling burnt out. They're feeling exhausted from their day-to-day life. And the past few years, they have been taking those jam-packed vacations where they're going to Europe or they're going to big sites in the U.S., Washington, D.C., for example, taking their kids to see all the big sites. And so a lot of people are just feeling completely over it and like they want a true vacation where they're just hanging out and doing nothing.
Are you kidding?
One day.
Boy, does that sound like a dream. I'll tell you that. Do people really do that? Are they really doing that? I want to do that. Sign me up. Right. That's for sure. Can we admit to our friends when, you know, you get together with the other parents from your school friends and so on? Is it okay to just go and lay on a beach?
I mean, you can be the trendsetter doing that. Then they're all going to be following you.
Isn't that funny? That is exactly right. I know that's everyone will then break down and admit, I want to do that, you know, but the peer pressure is incredible. So tell us, what kinds of vacations are people taking these days?
Yeah, how do you even plan something like that? I'm taking notes, actually.
First, leave the kids at home.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Step one.
Yeah, a lot of parents have said that if they're able to, sometimes they've left their kids at home or they're choosing an all-inclusive resort that has a kids club or some type of childcare where people can choose what they want to do that day and then all get back together for dinner later on. And so what we're really seeing is that people aren't completely turning away from those big trips, but they are prioritizing this type of travel in the trips that they're taking. So maybe they are going to an all-inclusive or to a closer to home destination where they're just relaxing, or they're prioritizing having down days during some of those bigger trips that they are taking.
So really focusing more on self-care. I would imagine that the resorts that have the spas and the yoga retreats and things like that, is that on the uptick now?
It is. Yeah, that has been more common throughout the pandemic, but this is really more people who didn't take these types of trips before, who really do take their jam-packed vacations very seriously and are taking the time to relax and actually feel like they had a relaxing and recharging vacation when they come back and not feel like they need a vacation from their vacation.
And financially, is this costing about the same as it would cost to take one of those super scheduled vacations?
It really depends where you're going and how long you're there, like any trip. But what people say is if they are going to an all-inclusive, they really enjoy that experience because they know exactly how much it's going to cost them before they go. And of course, there are upsells once you arrive, but as long as you're able to hold your boundaries and not indulge in too many of those, then you do know exactly how much you're spending. So in that way, it can be more affordable than other trips where surprise costs do come up.
Interesting. Well, I have to tell you, this is quite refreshing for me to hear. Now that this is a trend that's been announced as a real trend in the Wall Street Journal, no less, makes it okay for me to think this way. I'll tell you that. I'm excited about it. And the reality is we do get a chance to have both kinds of vacations. And that vacation or two that we take a year where it is just a recharge, where there's not a big full agenda and, you know, we're not running, we're not waking up in the morning having to be here, there, or somewhere. I will tell you, you do come back recharged. It does work. It's effective. It's not only enjoyable, but I think it's really important. It's important for health, mentally, physically, et cetera. You can do great bonding. It's healthy. It really feels healthy and you feel it when you come back.
Yeah. And I think when you think back on trips that you take with family or with friends, a lot of the memories that you have are things that are not very scheduled. Of course, you'll remember seeing landmarks and great sites, but it's really about what happens along the way that you weren't expecting. And so if you build in time for that to happen, whether it's for the entire trip or just for a few days, it doesn't mean that they'll be any less meaningful or fewer memories will be made. It really presents the same opportunity to do that.
For sure. Well, I know, Kristen, you have young kids. As you think about the way you're going to be spending your vacation time with them this year, what do you guys have going on?
Well, apparently nothing.
Nothing? Come on.
No, I mean, I love this idea of this kind of trip.
There you go. Time does slow down.
Yeah, it really
when
does.
When you don't have to be on a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really to that.
Right. Allison, thanks for being on with us today.
Of course, anytime. Thanks again for having me. Really appreciate that.
So, Kristen, we now have permission to really plan vacations that are do nothing. I mean, I've been doing that all along. I don't know about you. I think you get some time to go away and do nothing. You guys go up north and...
Yes, we do. We do plan trips where we just spend the day together as a family, and then we plan vacations where they are highly scheduled.
Right.
And I will say, I've asked my kids before, some of their favorite times are just sitting around doing nothing.
Doing nothing, exactly.
Just being with
well,
you.
Well, here's the good news. It sounds like you've been doing it right along. Our family's been doing it right along. We now don't have to worry about admitting that we're going to do a do-nothing vacation. Keeping up with the Joneses had that pressure on parents of trying to keep up with what others are doing and making sure you're seeing all the sites and all that educational stuff and everything else. Well, listen, Mark, I want to ask you, if you could plan a vacation for this summer, like what's your ideal? What would you be doing? You'd be playing golf, I have a feeling.
No, sitting on the beach.
I like the sitting on the beach, have a cocktail, smoke a cigar, do nothing, keep my feet in the sand. Or, you know, it depends where you're going. If you're going to Italy, you want to go see the sights.
Well, that's true. That's true. If you're going to Italy, you have more than one cocktail. Yeah. That's for sure. Hey,
but the old saying, right, when you get back from a vacation, you always say, I need a vacation.
Well, I think it depends on the vacation. I think, Mark, that's a really good point. And I think some of those vacations where you're scheduled out and you're rushing from here to there, and we got to be on time, let's go, kids, whatever it may be, you do come back and you feel like you need a vacation. But these do-nothing vacations, you should come back and feel like,
refreshed.
Oh, God, that was great. I'm ready to pick up again and go. And so there you have it. We have permission now to have do-nothing vacations. We are in big time. You know, part of the rich culture of the city of Detroit in this region, of course, we all know and appreciate the history and all the rest, how significant the auto industry and this notion of shifts and people filling a certain shift, the factories open round the clock all day long. Those shifts were running and humming and fully productive. But there was a thing that happened that was really popular, especially when Detroit was booming in the early to mid 1900s. There was a culture that bubbled up here in Detroit and businesses that served that culture. And the culture was to get off the shift late at night or early in the morning, as the case may be. The third shift got off actually between 6 and 7 a.m., as we understand it. And you'd head not home to go to bed right away and take some rest, but to head to a local pub, have a little food, have a little drink, connect with friends, unwind. Part of the culture here, and it went hand in glove with the whole experience of being a third shift worker in one of the auto companies, and of course, related businesses too. But something cool and interesting and really different about that idea of working all night, getting off the shift early in the morning and heading to a local pub, right?
Yeah, I think it's part of that.
Detroit grit,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's part
you
of
need
Detroit
to,
grit.
Yeah, they needed to unwind. That became their community. That was their watering hole. Back in the day, that's where they would cash their checks.
Exactly.
They would bring in their check and then they'd pay their
off. That's where they'd spend their checks.
Yeah, exactly.
Cash their checks and spend their checks all in the same time.
But it was part of those communities.
Yeah.
Each community had its own specific third shift bar.
Yeah, kind of cheers, if you will,
cheers.
But at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Those of us who don't or didn't work a late night shift or had family members or friends who did, we don't really know about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different kind of thing. If you said, you know, when you head to your local Cheers and grab a beer with a buddy, you know, you either say, I do it after work at 5,
right,
or I do it late night to watch a sporting event. But who does it at 7 a.m. in the morning, 6 a.m. in the morning? Well, the third shift workers getting off those third shifts, that's who does it. And they did it in a way that really powered a whole culture and business sector around it, as I said earlier. Well, is it still alive? Is it still happening as the auto industry has ratcheted back its aggressive production and not producing as they were through the night as much as they were? They don't have as many laborers as they did back then. That culture is kind of a dying thing, but not dead. Still alive, actually. Kristen, you found a cool story on this whole thing published by a local journalist, Mickey Lyons.
Yeah, Jeff, I came across this story and I thought it was so interesting because last year we were heavy into our pre-W Smith radio show and we got off
early in the morning.
Yeah, we got off at 6 a.m. And I thought, why didn't we ever go to one of these bars?
Why didn't we? And you know what? We're going to now because I want to check it out. It sounds really cool. Before we do that, let's hear about this culture and the businesses that serve it. Mickey Lyons, welcome to the show. Is this still something that is alive and kicking and happening right here in the Detroit region?
Yeah, I mean, it's still there. It's hanging on in pockets and in some places. But, you know, with the loss of that midnight shift, whether that's in the automotive factories or the secondary suppliers, with the loss of that, we are also losing some of these third shift bars. Sometimes they're closing completely, or in the case of one of the bars that I talked to for this article, they're just shifting their hours to reflect when people are actually coming in.
Isn't there a law preventing serving alcohol after, was it 2 a.m. in Michigan?
It is, yes, after 2 a.m., but believe it or not, you can get a special license to start serving at 7 a.m., and that's what these folks have. Yep.
So the typical third shift, and we're talking like typically auto workers, ended when? At what time? Around 7?
Usually around 6 or 7 in the morning,
Okay.
So they're going in at 11 p.m., getting out between 6 and 7 a.m. So when they leave, they're not heading for breakfast. They're going probably for dinner. I mean, that would be their dinner, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I heard from so many of the people that I talked to at the third shift bars was that, you know, everyone thinks they want bacon and eggs, but when you get done with your job at night, do you want bacon and eggs? No, you want a cheeseburger.
Right. Yeah.
Wait, that's typically if you were to finish during a, like a normal day shift, 5 right, 5 yeah. o'clock, you're going to get a cheeseburger.
Right.
So you're saying, are they going for cheeseburgers at 7 a.m.?
Of course they are.
Well, now you got my attention.
And they're having bacon and eggs at 10 at night.
Wow, everything's turned upside down. Are they having a beer with that burger at 7 a.m.?
Yes, they are. But you know what? They're not having a beer at 5 o'clock in the afternoon because they're asleep.
Oh,
so it's an entirely different circadian rhythm. Yeah.
Right.
And these aren't all just people coming off the line, manufacturers. These are doctors, nurses, police officers, right? You still have that shift that goes in at 11, gets out at 6 or 7 a.m. They need a place to gather.
Yeah. And I heard the word relax and decompress over and over again.
Huh.
You know, these folks are working super stressful jobs. They're dealing with stress and trauma all night, especially on the big holidays. And they need somewhere to go and unwind because they're wired after a, you know, scary night on the job.
Sure. Unless let the truth be told, if you head home at 7 a.m., then you walk in the door and your wife says, you got to drive the kids to school. Take the garbage out.
Right.
You know? So if you wait till 8 or 9 before you show up at home, the kids are already in school. Things have quieted down and you can get some rest. And I'm sure, you know, all kidding aside, there's probably some merit to all that, probably some truth to all that kind of pattern of behavior. You know, people outside of our region don't really know the auto culture, this notion of late night shifts and everything else. Of course, there's variations of it in other industries across the country, but it's such a part of historic Detroit culture. And it's kind of interesting to know that at some level anyway, it continues to this day. Do you have examples of places people who get off the third shift, where are they headed? Where are the popular spots?
Well, it depends on what side of town you're on. There's a few that are still around. East Point Pub is right on the border of Detroit and East Point, and they're right over by Ascension Hospital. So that's one spot that I talked to that a lot of folks are gathering out there. Honest John's right in downtown Detroit is still open at 7 in the morning. There's a couple more in Dearborn still. There's one all the way north up in Sterling Heights called McKenzie's Tavern, I believe, that still opens that early. So if you can find a hospital or a plant that has a midnight shift, there's a solid chance that there's still at least one third shift bar nearby.
I have to ask you this from a bar owner, business owner standpoint. If your bar, if it's open at 7 a.m. to serve this clientele, this third shift clientele, does that mean they're open round the clock typically? Or do these places just have different hours?
Well, it depends. It used to be yes. So Abix in Southwest Detroit was an example of a bar that was open from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. every day for many years, for actually pretty close to 100 years. And you have basically one person who works that early morning day shift. For Abix, it was Manya, who was born and raised in the bar, grew up there. A lot of times it is an older woman, a retired woman, a relative of somebody who owns the bar. And then night bar shifts are your typical night bar shifts. So, but one of the reasons that we are losing so many of these bars is not just because of the loss of the midnight shifts at the plant, but also we have lost, you know, the service industry in general has been decimated by recent changes. You know, the pandemic, everybody kind of closed down. There just are not as many bartenders and servers anymore.
Right. I was going to say the labor issues, the labor challenges, and this is probably, well, one could make an argument more challenging because of the odd hours that you'd have to work if you wanted to be here. But maybe that also makes it a unique opportunity for someone to pick up a second job, a second shift, if you will.
Yep.
A way to bring in supplemental income. I'm just thrilled to know, if you had asked me before I read your article, do you know a place where you can go get a burger and a beer at 7 a.m. in the morning? I probably wouldn't have been able to say yes to that at all. I'd say, what are you kidding? But the reality is it's really cool to know that the culture still does exist. And there are, even though just a handful, you mentioned a few, But just to know that the culture is still out there, businesses are still serving this community, it's kind of cool to know what's going on. You know, I got to tell you, one of the reactions I had was when I heard you describe these people headed to the bar not having bacon and eggs, but having instead the burger and a beer, I kind of want to go. Yeah. I don't have an excuse. I'm not getting off at 7 a.m. from work, but I want to go. The culture seems really cool. I like the kind of people who are out working at night. There's just something about it that's, it kind of reminds me of the, was it Hopper, the painting? You know, the
Nighthawks.
Nighthawks, yes. Yeah. Right? That's it.
Yeah, there's very much a Nighthawks vibe to an early morning bar when everyone's coming in. You know, a lot of the doctors and nurses and pharmacists are still in their scrubs. They are war weary. And they just want to chill out and relax, just like all of us do.
Right. And this becomes their community. These become their friends.
Yeah.
Some may be coworkers, but these are the people that they want to unwind with. And this is a unique group. So they're swapping stories and sharing about their day. Just their day is first thing in the morning. I love it. There's something kind of romantic about it, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure these people are regulars, so they probably all know each other. It's the classic Cheers kind of thing. I love it. Well, Mickey, I have to tell you, thanks for bringing this to our awareness. We appreciate it. And I seriously am going to check it out.
Yeah.
I am. It's a little late for this story. Nonetheless, I definitely want to do it. It's a cool culture. And who can turn down a burger and beer at 7 in the morning? All right. Listen, Mickey, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you being on. So, guys, Mark, by the way, Mark, you're a real Detroiter. When I think of Detroit, I do think of you and Detroit really synonymously. You've got that amazing work ethic. You grew up in the side of Detroit, which was kind of the music culture here in Detroit. But yeah, actually, you were going for a burger at 2 a.m., right?
Oh, yeah.
You'd get off the bar, you'd close, you're doing your shows, you'd head out at 2 a.m. You know, Mark, I just said it, Kristen, I don't know how you feel about this, but I got to say, Mark really is, he personifies Detroit. Hardworking, amazing work ethic. I noticed that about Mark. You got it in your blood, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
It's in your DNA, that Detroit thing. All right. Well, Kristen, Mark, listen, we always like to go deep on our stories. We like to know what we're talking about. We're definitely going we're going on a field trip. Anybody who wants to join us, we'll let people know when we're going.
Yeah.
Anybody who wants to meet us for a burger and beer at 7 a.m., we're in. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay.
Wrapping up our show, really interesting feature on a very cool guy who's quite accomplished, realized his entrepreneurial dreams or is on his way to doing that. That being Joe Short. He owns Short's Brewery in Bel Air, Michigan, in the northwest part of the state, and has met with great success. Great story. We actually had him here in our studios to interview him for our business biography show that we produce and air here on WJR. Before we head out, though, we grabbed him to do a little feature for us on St. Paddy's Day and how to get the most out of St. Paddy's Day. Really kind of, he's from a bar owner's perspective, but giving us some tips on how to make the most of St. Paddy's Day. Kristen, you had a chance to sit down with him. It's interesting, you took this story. Anytime there's a story on beer, you seem to be grabbing those. And for whatever reason, you grabbed this one. You got a good one.
Yes. Joe, thanks so much for being with us.
I'm very honored.
How do you usually celebrate St. Paddy's Day in Bel Air?
How do we celebrate St. Paddy's in Bel Air? I don't think it's been the same way twice. this year, because St. Paddy's Day falls on a Sunday, and we've been really struggling with trying to figure out if music on weekend nights is working, because I feel like the consumer patterns are changing a little bit. So what we decided to do was forego a Saturday night party and really lean into the day of day drinking session for Sunday.
Nice.
Because 20 years ago, we weren't married or had children, so we were a little bit more reckless. But now,
Now you're more reckless.
Now we're just reckless during... We're earlier reckless.
That's right.
So for this year, we've always done some corned beast inspired menu items. Corned beef nachos and pizza and, of course, our classic Rift sandwich. But this year, this is where I think the fun part of Shorts with my partner, Scott, he's such a good sport. We had some fun videos that we primed the pump with to get those out with. And I was excited about the content we created to promote the day drinking party. And then we went to our friends at Ironfish and grabbed a handful of bourbon barrels. And we put in our super delicious, ultra creamy Irish stout into one of those barrels. I custom drilled out the top and we're mounting a beer engine on it, which is what cask conditioned beer is served from. So our cask is literally a 55-gallon drum that used to have whiskey in it that now has Irish stout. That I will be pouring personally in my green leprechaun top hat tuxedo outfit. We're going to have stout Irish rock from our friends, the Haymakers, who are going to play during the day. And so the whole idea is like, come get your day party on. You'll be home because it's a school night and everybody wins. You can even bring the kids out.
I love it. And I've actually been lucky enough to be at your brewery in Bel Air. And it is an amazing scene. It's super family friendly. And Mark, our show ends at 2 o'clock. I think if we hop in the car right now, we can be up to Bel Air and be ready to go.
Let's
Sunday.
Go. I'm ready.
I think it's so great. What a special treat to have Joe Short here with us from Short's Brewery. Now, if I can't make it to Bel Air and I just happen to be going to my local grocery store, what should I be pulling off the shelf?
Right now, we have a limited offering of a super delicious, ultra creamy nitro Irish stout available. And of course, the regular Short's lineup. So any liquid form of Short's, you will be in good company.
Oh, nice.
And condition.
And spirit.
And spirit. Right. I love it. That's so great. And then, Joe, could you also tell us the website if people want to look further and learn more about Short's Brewery?
Yeah, it's very easy, shortsbrewing.com. And we've got a lot of fun content on our Instagram page. So please enjoy that. And if you can make it up in person, the pub, obviously great menu and live entertainment, especially in the summer with the beer garden. And our pull barn, which is the tasting room at the production facility, is a great spot to stop in. So, and of course, when you're at home base, there's always fun, new, weird stuff to try.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Kristen, I got to tell you, this great discussion with Joe, very helpful, getting us pointed in the right direction to make the most of our St. Paddy's Day. But I got to also tell you, I know you heard, you had a chance to sit in and listen to the interview we did for Business Biography with him. That's going to be coming up soon right here on WJR. We'll make sure we get the date out. It's a can't miss. What a cool story. What a cool guy. He's got it going on. Magical vibe going on there. And it sounds like we haven't had the chance to really enjoy his pub, but we're going to another road trip.
Another one.
There's a lot of themes going on here. One of them is definitely, we got to hit the road.
Yeah. If we leave right now, Jeff, we can make it.
Exactly.
We can make it in time for St. Paddy's Day tomorrow.
Well, that sounds amazing. And for those of you fortunate enough to be going to Short's Brewery, enjoy. The rest of us will be enjoying all the other great pubs in and around this area. Great show, great weekend. Looking forward to a little St. Paddy's Day celebration tomorrow. Hope you all are too. Thanks for joining us here on today's Let's Go Michigan.